Good morning and welcome to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. It's the weekly program about health, nutrition, fitness, and just about anything else that fits into lifestyle here in Park City. I'm Lynn Ware-Peak. I'm here with my co-host Tim Henney. And today in the program, we'll first speak with Scott Kelly of Rebound Health and Performance Center. Now, here is one you'll want to stay tuned for. Scott likely knows more about gluten and why we should cut back on it than well, just about any other local, national, or international expert, for that matter. He'll be speaking with us in just a few minutes.
Good morning, Lynn. Then we'll head into bike safety and a look at the Tour of Utah. Andy Damon of the Compass Program at Montage will be in to preview what's going on for everyone at the Montage during the Tour of Utah.
And then Heinrich Dieters and Bob Kohler of the City and the Chamber Bureau will be in to talk about all the logistics here in Park City during the Tour of Utah. It'll pass through Park City on Saturday, and then on Sunday, Park City is hosting the start and the finish of the tour. And then Summit and Wasatch counties will see the race pass through their communities. This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
How high can you go? How far can you push yourself? Take the Adventure Course Challenge at the Utah Olympic Park, featuring three new adventure courses for all levels and ages. Plus, don't miss the Ultimate Gravity Challenge on the 60-foot drop tower. Do it all when you get the new Adventure Pass for $40. Your pick of three adventures in a day. For passes and tickets, go to UtahOlympicLegacy.com. Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing sport and recreation opportunities.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. Only in Park City, only on KPCW. I'm Lynn Ware-Peak here with my co-host Tim Henney. Well, gluten is the newish demon. Actually, we've been hearing about gluten sensitivity and intolerance for a long time, but thought that perhaps it didn't apply to us until we started hearing more about it, until we hear that celiac disease affects about 1 in 130 people, until we started hearing about friends who were going gluten-free. Are we jumping on the bandwagon against gluten? Is it just the next trend? Our guest, Scott Kelly, has lectured on for years on gluten. He's the owner of Rebound Health and Performance Center here in Park City. He's, among many other things, a transformative health and well-being coach, functional diagnostic nutritionist, kinesiologist, and back wellness specialist. And Scott Kelly, it's a pleasure to have you. Welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much, Lynn. Good morning, and good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Scott.
Okay, so I want to break this gluten thing down. I know, as I told you before, I've missed every one of your lectures on gluten, but I know, and I've heard you speak about it before. So let's start here. Bread is the staff of life, right? It's been around for millennia. Mm-hmm. We've been eating bread forever. What happened along the way that corrupted, if I can call it that, wheat, or what happened with gluten? I've heard some speculation on about genetic modification and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So it goes back to well-intentioned efforts to create a wheat that is drought-resistant, cold-resistant, help world hunger, and create better baking characteristics. And so the short story is we now have about 25,000 varieties of wheat in the world today, whereas in the 18th century, there were only about 5 varieties. So wheat has made a long journey in being modified in many, many ways. And in that process, gluten has been, it has increased in the wheat product dramatically.
Okay, so about when did that happen?
It's happened over the past several thousands of years because it started with the original kind of grain or the original wheat being einkorn. And einkorn got together with goat grass and created a new wheat. And that new wheat got together with another wheat. And this is how this began to evolve over the past several years. So if we really want to go back, we have to go back to einkorn. However, some people with sensitivities may not even tolerate einkorn these days because of the level of sensitivity that has developed.
Scott, what is gluten? I don't really understand what the gluten compound or element is in wheat.
Yeah, so that's a great question. And what it is, it's a protein molecule. It's gliadin is a protein molecule in wheat products. And we've got it in wheat, in barley. We've got it, it's far easier to actually talk about which grains don't have gluten in them. And then we've got quinoa, right? And we've got millet, we've got amaranth, we've got buckwheat, and these are all gluten-free grains. Most grains actually have some level of gluten in them. And so if we stick with the gluten-free grains, we can be really quite safe.
But during this process of the reconfiguration of so many varieties of wheat and then trying to manipulate them for drought tolerance and things like that, what happened to the gluten? You said it sort of started to rise.
Yeah. So one of the things that's, if you take a look at, if you ask any pastry chef what they love about certain wheats, is that it's the doughiness, and the gluten in the dough is what creates that doughiness, and it makes it fun to work with and easy to work with, pliable. And so as we discovered more and more about the pliability of gluten, the gluten was elevated in the product itself.
And what does gluten do that's so problematic?
So this is where we get into the sensitivities. And what we find is that the body develops an intolerance to, or cannot break down the protein, and creates an inflammatory response in the body. Now, what's really interesting about it is that we oftentimes hear about celiac disease, which is a huge problem. But if we go back to the definition of celiac disease is defined by an inflammatory response or an immune response in the gut specifically. But what we're actually seeing now is that there's a much higher incidence of gluten sensitivity outside of the gut. And that's what really grabbed my attention about 10 years ago as I was diving into the world of gluten sensitivity and gluten intolerance.
Okay. Is there anything that gluten does for us that is healthful at this point?
Yeah, that's a great question, Lynn. And it's not a nutrient. It's not an essential nutrient that you have to have in your body. So the answer to that is no, it doesn't.
But it does accompany some essential nutrients in a more palatable way.
It can.
Kind of.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we find it in so many foods that are grain based. And we also find it in a lot of naked foods. So a lot of prepared foods, a lot of salad dressings, a lot of baked goods, a lot of pretzels, those kinds of things, which are really naked in essence. So if you eliminated those from your diet, you're actually not really missing anything except for convenience.
Has that sensitivity amongst a population always been there?
No. And part of the challenge that we're seeing is that it's the amount of exposure that we have to gluten. So one of the things that we know is that when you're exposed to a food over and over and over again in high volume, the body has a tendency to grow, develop a sensitivity to it. And so when you take a look at products that contain wheat and gluten in them, it's in everything. It's in ketchups. It's in salad dressings. It's in soups. It's in pizza. It's in all of the things that people eat multiple times a day, every single day. And that inflammatory response or that inability to break down that protein overwhelms the body. The body develops a sensitivity to it and begins to attack.
That we've heard this with sugar. It's the same. I mean, it's a kind of a similar theme where certain number of years ago, not that long ago, 50 years ago, the average per capita consumption was 5 pounds, and now it's 150 pounds per annual consumption, and our bodies are simply overwhelmed, and it has to do with the processed nature of our food. They've replaced fiber with sugar. And is that kind of what's happening with gluten as well? It's just becoming prevalent in everything because it adds that element of workability and makes food texture better and more palatable, and so it's just spreading into all these elements of our food that we consume regularly because of the processed nature of our food.
Absolutely, and that's exactly what we're seeing. That it's cheap, it creates it's a great filler for many foods, and that's exactly what we're seeing is that through the overproduction of food and the processing of food, we're seeing it show up more and more.
Now, I've often thought about this intolerance and even food allergies that we develop as a result of being overexposed. You know, peanuts, I think, as one of those. We never used to hear about peanut allergies, and then all of a sudden we did, and I always had suspected that it's just overexposure to it. Now, remember, I've wondered this about gluten. Back in, I was in college in the early 80s, all we did was we ate bagels all day long, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And I think bagels were sort of introduced to this country in maybe the late 70s or something.
In New York City, you can't get away from the bagel shop on every single corner, and that's what you do.
Right, yeah. Right. And then also, that coincided with the time where, if you were an athlete, you were supposed to eat about 90%
Absolutely.
Carbohydrates and no fat. It was the Eat to Win or something like a book I remember. So I was on the rowing team in college, and all that anyone ever ate was carbohydrate.
Yeah.
How'd that work out for you, Len?
Well, I was a little chunky, to tell you the truth. And I probably had a whole host of other things, or developed them, that Scott's going to tell me about. I mean, do you think that that's kind of the time, the era that it...
You know, it's hard to say, but what I will comment on is that if we're looking for a sensitivity, if I'm looking for gas or bloating or constipation or diarrhea challenges from gluten, then I may not find it. But that doesn't mean that I don't have a sensitivity. And the reason for that is this is a number that blew me away and really made me dive into this deeper. For every one person that has the gut challenge with gluten, there are 8 people who have it out of the gut. And so, you know, back in college, we may have been eating all of these gluten products, but we didn't have a digestive problem. We may have had headaches. We may have had fatigue. You know, who's not fatigued in college? We may have had inability to pay attention to things. We may have had joint aches, or maybe we gained weight.
You could feel hungover.
Or you could
in
feel
college.
Hungover. Absolutely. You could feel hungover.
But it was gluten.
24 hours a day.
Yeah.
And you would never know that it was gluten. And that's what really blows me away, is that what we're looking at now is not something that's a digestive challenge only. It's really a whole health and well-being challenge.
And how did that come about, that greater understanding of the implications of gluten outside of the stomach?
So there are two things. There are a couple of things that happen. One is that if you think about the gut, if you think about the lining of the large and the small intestine, you've got this lining filled with villi. And the best visual for that is, think about a shag carpet. Okay. Think about the lining of your intestine like a shag carpet. And what gluten does, and when there's lots of inflammation in the system because of gluten sensitivity, it wears down the shag carpet, right? So over time, that shag carpet becomes Berber. Now, if you've got shag carpet, you've got a wonderful place for nutrients to come into the body to be absorbed and pulled into the cells for optimal health and well-being. If you've got Berber, you've got an environment where nutrients come in and they just slip right through, and they don't have access outside of the intestine. Now, in addition to that, when you have lots of inflammation in the gut secondary to a gluten sensitivity, and you've got this Berber-looking type of intestine, you can develop a sort of leaky gut or permeable gut challenge, where food molecules pass through, and now you've got something that is more systemic working in the body. Now, that's one of the ways that gluten starts to operate outside of the intestine. The second way, and what we've seen, is that when someone has a gluten sensitivity, there's a large population of people who actually develop autoantibodies, organ-specific autoantibodies. So what that means is they develop antibodies that attack specific organs. So, for example, someone with gluten sensitivity has 150% likelihood of developing thyroiditis, which is an autoimmune disease where body attacks the thyroid. So we start to see that gluten outside of the gut actually creates a number of things like autoimmune challenges and lack of blood flowing to the brain and a number of things that we would never suspect or tie back to gluten. But this is what the research and evidence is showing us now.
Wow. Wow. That's one of the things that comes up for me is that isn't it so hard to diagnose? I mean, you know, I go to the doctor, I say, gee, my shoulder hurts. You know, it might be gluten intolerance or sensitivity.
Yeah.
I mean, what is the structure around being able to diagnose that? And I suppose that, you know, allopathic doctors may not be picking it up or maybe haven't in the past, probably are more aware of it now. But
yeah. So when I started my career 20 years ago as an orthopedic rehab specialist, it was about 11 years later that I decided that I needed to take a very close look at gluten because of the joint challenges that we were seeing. And what I started to discover was that when we pulled people off gluten, their joints felt better. And it was because we were pulling out the inflammation in their body. And so we, about 10 years ago, we decided to become a gluten-free practice. And part of working with us is that we're going to go gluten-free for the next 6 to 8 weeks. And so that's what we saw. But to answer your
question, is that with everybody?
That's with everybody. Because I don't generally have people who walk in my door and say, man, I feel so darn good. I just want to feel a little bit better, right? So people come in and they've generally been, you know, quote unquote, everywhere, and they can't figure out what's going on. So our goal is to decrease inflammation. One of the fastest ways to do that is pull gluten out of the diet. And to answer your question, a good health history and a good evaluation of how someone spends their energy feeding themselves is a great place to start in an evaluation. If someone's got lots of processed foods in their diet, if they eat a lot of wheat-based products, then it would be a good idea to pull them off gluten to see. And I say that because what you're pulling out is not an essential nutrient, right? You're not pulling out something that you're going to put your health at risk by pulling out. In fact, you're going to probably make yourself a whole lot better by pulling it out.
Now, you pull out the gluten, yeah, and you do an assessment and see what happens by pulling out the gluten. And I don't want to derail the conversation from gluten, but do you also then pull out something like sugar? Because sugar has an inflammatory effect also.
Absolutely. You know, so we have a list of about five things that we like to pull out immediately.
And you do them one at a time so that you can assess, you know, the level on each one?
You know, we do it kind of all together, but most importantly, we focus on what you should eat, not what you can't eat, right? We put the focus on what is nutrient dense and what is life-giving foods. But what I would encourage somebody to do if they're curious is pull out gluten and pull out dairy. Those two go hand in hand, and I can speak more about why that is, but they go hand in hand, and you pull them out for 8 to 12 weeks, and you got to be really strict with it. And here's the reason why. One exposure to gluten in a 30-day period is as if you were not gluten-free for that 30 days. That's the inflammatory response that protein can create in the body for those who have a sensitivity.
Okay, so is the inflammatory response the same in everyone, whether or not you have, I mean, we know that we all have inflammation in the body, but will it be the same or different?
It won't be the same for everybody. Some people have, so there's kind of a spectrum of sensitivity. Some people are highly sensitive. So they've actually got something like celiac. Some people have less of a sensitivity, and it's really based on their volume. For some people, it's based on the amount of time that they've been exposed to gluten. So some people have are diagnosed celiac in their 40s and 50s. And the reason for that is because it took that long for the villi in their gut to wear down to show up in a test. Doesn't mean that they didn't have a sensitivity. It just means that it took that long to show up.
Are there some people that aren't sensitive at all?
There are some people that aren't sensitive at all.
And is their gut and their digestive system operating well? It's not been shaved down to Berber. I mean, it's still a shag carpet.
Absolutely. Yeah. There are some people out there. So some of the most recent research that I've seen shows that 7 out of 10 people in the United States, 7 out of 10 people have some level of gluten sensitivity. Now, that could be a very low gluten sensitivity or a very high gluten sensitivity, but 7 out of 10. So 30% of the population.
Yeah. So
you pull them off of the gluten, and then what do you do? I mean, I'm sure I'd like to sort of see what the next step is.
Great.
Is it getting into whole foods, raw foods, unprocessed foods?
Yeah, so that's a great question, Tim, because ultimately what you want to do is you want to put out the fire. And if there's a gluten sensitivity, it's creating a fire. So you pull it out, and really the next step is to increase nutrient density. Eat foods, lots of fruits and vegetables, leafy greens. If you eat meat, then the highest quality meat that you can get your hands on, grass-fed, free-ranging type of animal products, if those are on your menu. You want to make sure you get up the nutrient density so that your body has the tools and the resources to go and do the repair work required. So you replace it with nutrient-dense foods. And then oftentimes, and most importantly for a lot of people, they need to go into a gut healing phase where we can use specific supplements to facilitate regrowing the villi in the gut, including creating a nice environment for the bacteria, for the beneficial bacteria, using probiotics and so on and so forth. So there's a step-by-step process, but the first step is pulling out gluten and being really, really strict with it. And most people find, when I work with people, after about 8 to 12 weeks, I say, hey, you know what? If you want to add gluten back in your diet, go for it. And they look at me and they say, are you crazy?
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel so much better. Their energy is better. Their clarity of thought is better. Their joints feel better. They can actually have a bowel movement or three every single day. So these are all the benefits of creating an environment where inflammation is controlled.
It's the only thing I've ever done in my diet that makes me feel any different. And I haven't even done it, you know, in a really strict way, the way that you talk about. But as soon as I cut it out, I have much more energy. It's interesting. I wanted to ask you about other countries. You know, if I think of a country like New Zealand, who's done a lot in trying to do away with GMOs, and are you finding any different statistics in other countries? I mean, if 7 out of 10 here have sensitivity, is it the same around the world?
Yeah, you know what? I haven't seen any research, but I have heard some interesting stories. And actually, most recently in the past couple of weeks, had a couple of clients come back from trips to Europe in the summer. And they said, you know what? We were fantastic as a family or as an individual, was gluten-free. I had one or two slip-ups. And the thing that was crazy is it didn't hit me the way that it does here. And it really made me wonder, what's the difference? And I think there is a difference between, you know, the amount of sugar that's in the foods and the type of wheat that's being used. And I don't know specifically the differences that are going on in some of these other countries.
That's so interesting. I, as well, just got back from Europe a couple of weeks ago. I was on assignment. For this program, exactly. Thank goodness. It all ties back into the mountain life. But I found the same thing. And the bread in France is so delicious.
Yeah.
And
how would you know? You weren't eating bread.
It was my experiment. And I found that it worked for me. I didn't get bloated. And I thought it was the combination of rosé along with...
Well, I was going to ask. You also experimented with the local wines, did you not?
You know, maybe that's it. It all comes down to really more whole food
overall,
locally produced items, which you get more.
Absolutely. So I want to make a comment about that, because oftentimes people say, okay, well, great. If I go gluten-free, I see all these wonderful gluten-free foods in the marketplace now. It's a huge billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar industry right now. But the caution that I place is that those foods are great to use on occasion, but they're not really replacement foods. And the reason for that is that they're naked. They're even more naked than gluten-full foods in many ways. And the reason for that is that when you create a bread, for example, and you look at the label, it will say enriched. And really what enriched means in a food is that we beat up the wheat so badly and took the nutrients out that we actually had to put something back in by requirement.
Wasn't that Wonder Bread's
whole thing? That was Wonder Bread's whole thing. Yes, enriched.
Enriched. Right? Enriched white bread.
Exactly. But the challenge that we have with gluten-free foods is they don't fall under those guidelines. They don't have to be enriched. So you've got lots of things made with potato flour and tapioca, which... are great to make gluten-free foods, but they don't add any nutrient value. So if you do a straight swap over, you're going to end up, you know, not serving yourself with nutrient-dense foods. So use them on occasion. Use them on your journey, but don't use them as a replacement because you probably won't feel as well as you could.
Okay, that's great. Scott Kelly, we're out of time. It's so great to talk to you. Are there any last things that you wanted to get out that you didn't about gluten that we didn't ask you?
You know, I have a recorded webinar of a workshop that I did. You can go to reboundhealthcenter.com and you can give us a call and we can align you with that. If you want to check out goglutenfreegracefully.com, Jill Mulshan, a local here in Park City, has done an amazing job putting together resources for individuals to help them go gluten-free gracefully. And she's also the owner of the institute that certifies restaurants to be gluten-free. Mm-hmm. And you can check out that list on that website as well, goglutenfreegracefully.com.
That's great. We'll add that to our website, kpcw.org. You can go under the Programs tab and find The Mountain Life. That will be uploaded along with Scott's talk here.
And you can like our Mountain Life page.
Our Facebook page, indeed. And yeah, we'll load those websites on. And Scott Kelly, it's a pleasure to have you on today, and thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. We'll be right back with Andy Damon. He's with the Compass Program at the Montage to talk about bike safety and also great things going on there during the tour of Utah. Stay with us.
Hey, Dave, when is the best time for a story?
Sunday mornings at 8:30.
Hi, this is Kathy.
And I'm Dave. We're co-hosts of The Story Mine. Tune in Sunday mornings right here at KPCW.
Experience the treasures of storytelling every Sunday morning at 8:30.
Hi, I'm Dr. Lisa Saturnino. I'm a local resident and board-certified medical provider. I'm excited to announce a new Intermountain InstaCare right here in Park City. We provide access to quality, urgent care without having to leave the area. Instead of waiting in line, you now have the convenience of calling ahead or just as you're on your way. Call us at 435-649-7705. Intermountain Healthcare is a nonprofit organization.
I'm John Wells. Join us Thursday at 9 a.m. for Community Voices.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peake. We'll talk to you about issues in the news that matter to you.
That's Community Voices, Thursday at 9 a.m. on KPCW.
Brought to you by 350 Main and the Spur Bar and Grill.
Hello, this is Jill Van Ostel, Spa Director at Stein Erickson Lodge Deer Valley, a proud supporter of KPCW Radio. Our Norwegian spa offers wellness classes, fitness facility, an outdoor pool with food and beverage service, treatment menus, and locally crafted product lines. 645-6475 or steinlodge.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peake here with my co-host, Tim Henney. Well, our next guest, Andy Damon, runs the Compass Program at the Montage. You may not realize it, but this Compass Program is a vibrant outdoor program. Andy's also in the community. He's, in addition to being director of resort activities at the Montage, he came to Park City from the Four Seasons in Jackson, Wyoming. He's an accomplished skier and cyclist. He's really passionate about staying safe on the bike, notably after a personal incident involving his wife and an accident. Maybe he'll talk a little bit about that. He's also here to talk about some exciting things going on at the Montage during the tour of Utah. It sounds like Team BMC is going to have a big trailer up there. So joining us in the studio, Andy Damon. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning. Good morning.
Great to have you here. So, well, let's get it all taken care of first about the tour of Utah. And I think it's going to pass by the Montage a handful of times. Well, twice at least.
Twice, correct.
Okay. Okay, so once on Saturday when first the riders from the Ultimate Challenge will be coming through, mm-hmm. and then the race will come through, heading up over Guardsman Pass and down into Brighton and Solitude.
Right.
And then tell us about the Sunday race.
Yeah, so Sunday we'll come up the backside Guardsman Pass from Midway, which is kind of my daily commute. definitely going to be a big challenge again this year. Last year, that's where Levi went off the front to win the stage, which was kind of exciting. And then it just comes passing in front of the montage, and you get a quick split second to see those riders round that corner by the roundabout and then head down the hill.
Now, wait a minute. It's your daily commute, really? You live in Midway?
I do live in Midway. Oh. So I ride up once a week is what I try to do.
Talk about the surface of that road and the gradient.
So I've been in Midway now 2 years, and it's been amazing what Wasatch has done to that road to improve it. It's still a chip seal road. It's smooth enough. I would say the grade gets 12 to 14% in places, and it's definitely a grind. There is no pause all the way up. You are just kind of from the guard gate to the top of the pass, pinning it till you hit Matt's Flats, and then from there it feels kind of easy. And then the reward is the downhill from there.
Right. Now, the downhill to the montage on a beautifully paved, well, part of it's beautifully paved if you go on the residence road.
Right. And the upper section actually isn't too bad. It's just really narrow. It's always neat to watch the people when I'm standing out behind the shop just come flying down that road. And the pavement's great. I mean, there's not a lot of traffic. All the traffic seems to be very cautious of all the cyclists on the road. And Deer Valley has it signed extremely well up there, too.
Yeah, that's new pavement now from the top of the guard road all the way to the montage. It's nice, smooth, not roto milled, not chip sealed, but it is narrow.
Right. Is it dangerous going home down that chip sealed road on the backside of Empire Pass?
That's a great question. Being a little bit involved with Wasatch Trails Alliance and knowing the DNR at Wasatch State Park, that's always a huge concern over there. I'm a slow person, so those that take caution down that road, it proves to be a lot safer. But, you know, every day I get passed on the way up, and every day I get passed on the way home, so...
Right. So the key with the Tour of Utah is that they're never descending on those chip-sealed roads, right?
Correct.
They're always ascending.
Correct.
So it's a little safer when you're going about 2 miles an hour. Of course, they won't be going 2 miles an hour. Okay, so let's talk about what's going on at the montage during the Tour of Utah. Well, which has already started, so is it
Correct.
Already going on?
And BMC won the first stage yesterday, which is really great to see. I just actually pulled everything up this morning, and it's great to see that they're kind of in the front right now. But the Tour of Utah will pass directly in front of Montage Deer Valley, both on Saturday, April 10th, which is Stage 5, and Sunday, April 11th, Stage 6. It's a great time to check out the beautiful line of bikes at the only official BMC North America Test Center, which recently we just were partnering with BMC on, and which is at Compass Sports. Complimentary demos will be held on both days. We have the BMC truck coming up. We'll have their full line of bikes here at the montage. Demos are, again, complimentary, and that'll be running from 10 until 6 Saturday and Sunday. And come on up. Come up early before the race comes by, ride a bike, and then we'll have a tent also on the side of the road for spectators to watch the racers as they come up the pass on Saturday and down the pass on Sunday, which will be a lot of fun.
Now, last night, I watched a recap of or a replay of the first stage on one of the local networks. I'm not sure which channel it was, but at 9 o'clock at night, one of our local networks from Salt Lake plays the race, recaps the whole race. So that was fun to watch.
Yeah.
Now, Compass Sports, is that a business that's based at the Montage, or is that part of the Montage program?
So Compass Sports is part of the Montage. It's the resort activity center for Montage. So every day we call it our 30 activities program, which we have games all over. Out every door you basically can walk out of on our lawns. And we wanted to design a program that really felt like parents and kids coming to camp in the summer. So there's always something to do, whether it's, you know, bocce, volleyball, playing pool, basketball, life-size chess, checkers, shuffleboard. We do archery 10, 1, and 3 for our guests. We do intro to mountain biking tours every day at 9 a.m., which are complimentary and gives them the foundation to feel safe on the bike and hopefully be able to explore the 450 miles of trails we have right out the back door at Montage.
And is it exclusively for your guests, or do you consider your guests to be community members who come and want to partake in some of these activities?
It's a really good question that we get quite often. We have a lot of people that come into the montage, and we do everything that we can to accommodate each and every request, just like our outlets. Our outlets are open to the public. The services at the montage in Compass Sports are open to the public. So if somebody wants to come up, rent a bike, if we do have availability for archery, we would reserve the spot for our guests first. But if there is an opening, we would do everything in our power to accommodate. And then bike-wise, we do, you know, we do some fun things when people come into the resort. The staff there, if you pull up and you're coming in for lunch, you're going to get done with lunch and your bike's going to be freshly cleaned, lubed, tuned up while you're just waiting.
Oh, kind of like that.
Yeah, that never happens to me typically. Hey, just a clarification, Andy. Both mountain bike and road bikes are part of the demo program for the weekend?
Yes, we have mountain and road.
Okay. Perfect.
And we do, we have 26s, we have trail bikes, we have the team machines, which is what the team rides on. We have the new Grand Fondo, which is a lot of fun. That's the bike for long distances. It's kind of the new trend of the industry is kind of putting these bikes with a little bit wider tires, lower gearing out there, and makes it easier to climb these passes we have around here.
Okay. We've got about 2 minutes left, Andy, and you gave a great talk during the Park City Cycling Festival about bike safety. Can you condense it down to just a bullet point list? I mean, it seems like common sense, but some of the things you said were just so great.
Yeah, absolutely. So take my 15-minute speech into 2 minutes here. During the Park City Cycling Festival, we had a really good conversation about bike safety. I geared it towards road safety out there. And the biggest thing I'd love for everybody to take away is when you're on the road, be the better person and take the higher road when it comes to, you know, weaving in and out of traffic, how you're turning the corners. Make sure you're riding in the correct lanes. You're being cognizant of others around. Don't be riding four abreast when there's no shoulder. You know, when we have, like, on the 248, there's a really wide shoulder out there right now. Before the construction, you can ride two abreast. The law states you can ride two abreast in Utah. But when the road gets narrow and the shoulder gets narrow, be the person that rides single file. Get your group together. Keep everybody safe. Point out those obstacles. Obey the speed limit signs. I love using Marzac as an example because it's 40 miles per hour down the mine road. And then it turns into 25, and there's a stop sign. That stop sign is there for a reason. It's to slow traffic, to keep people safe as you're coming down to the roundabout, and the speed limit's 25. Like, it's our responsibility to stop at that stop sign and to obey the traffic laws here in Utah and Park City and just take the high road when we're cycling. The other point that I like to make is just when you're out there, have fun riding. Don't be the guy that's aggro. I read a lot of interesting articles in the newspaper about, you know, a rider kicking a car and, you know, riders doing this and cars doing this. And if we all can get together and just, you know, ride with care of each other, and we're on a bike dressed in Lycra head to toe, as much as we think that's protection, there's really not a lot that's going to keep us safe between us and the road, that if we do come head to head with a car, we're not going to win that fight. So, and my other point is just wear your helmet. Please wear your helmet. Going uphill or downhill, it just takes one fall real quickly to kind of get you injured.
Not even uphill and downhill. It's out on the road. I see people on the road without helmets, which is shocking to me. But, I mean, I guess, you know.
Right.
Excellent. Well done. Condensation there of a 15-minute talk. Andy Damon, he's the director of resort activities at the Montage's Compass program. And thanks, Andy, so much for your time today.
Thank you.
We'll see you up there over the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, free demos with Team BMC and a great viewing place for both Saturday and Sunday.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks for your time. This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. We'll be back with Heinrich Dieters and Bob Kohler of the City and the Chamber Bureau. They'll talk more about Tour of Utah and some of the logistical things that we all need to keep in mind over this coming weekend. Stay with us.
Hello, I'm Dr. David Monday at Park City Urology, a part of the Intermountain Specialty Clinic. Did you know that one-third of all adults aged 30 to 70 experience loss of urinary control, but more than two-thirds never seek treatment? Park City Urology treats urinary incontinence through medications, minimally invasive outpatient procedures, and exercise regimens. If you have struggled with urinary incontinence, we at Park City Urology can help. 435-658-7470 or parkcityurology.org. The Intermountain Park City Specialty Clinic is a non-profit organization.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware-Peak, here with my co-host Tim Henney. And now joining us in the studio, I have Trails Coordinator, which you need a different title, Heinrich Dieters. Oh, you do? Okay.
Would you like me to give it to you?
Yes.
I got it 2 years ago, but it's okay. Jay was asking me from the newspaper the other day as well. So it's actually Trails and Open Space Project Manager.
Okay. Well, still that does
Congratulations
not.
Congratulations on the promotion.
There we go.
Very much, Bob.
2 years ago. That doesn't encompass all the things that you do, because you're here to talk about the Tour of Utah.
Which is a road bike race.
Right,
that's
no
right.
Trails.
That's right. So Heinrich Dieters from the city, you'll have to update me on that title again. And Bob Kohler is a special events director with the Chamber Bureau here in Park City. They're both joining us to talk about some of the things we need to know and maybe just some general interest about the Tour of Utah. We've been talking about it for a couple of months. It now started in Bryanhead Resort yesterday, an exciting first stage ending in Cedar City, starting this morning in Panguitch, starting in 10 minutes, yeah. 12 minutes, and ending in Torrey. That's going through Bryce National Park. And boy, I hear that it's the Tour of Utah is being broadcast in 97 countries. And it's what a way to give great exposure to Utah. Bob, maybe you can talk about that.
Yeah, not just internationally, but there's also 2 hours of live national coverage on Fox Sports Network each day from 2 to 4, with the exception of the Salt Lake City Circuit Race, which is an evening race. So that'll be live as well. It's, I think, 6 to 8. Or 5:30 to 7:30, I think it is, when they're televising that. But, so we get great exposure, tons of international media coming here to watch and report on a number of the international teams. So of the 16 teams that are competing, 5 competed in the Tour de France. So these are professional athletes, million-dollar salaries. It's not just an amateur bike race, it's right here in our backyard. It's a great opportunity.
The turnout in Park City over the last couple of years has been just phenomenal.
Huge, yeah.
And it really adds a lot of energy to this event and showcases Park City. So how does the community interact, or how does this event interact with the community?
Well, there's a couple of ways. I mean, when we began discussions with the Tour of Utah, and it was determined that there was going to be the championship stage on a Sunday, we sort of put our hat in the ring and kind of said, if there's going to be a major event on a Sunday in the state of Utah, it should be in Park City. And they agreed.
Is that an easy argument to make? I mean,
well, I think
you
so.
Want it, but...
Right, but there's a lot of other communities that want to host the final
right.
championship stage, so it certainly was a competitive discussion. And obviously, they selected Park City. And last year, with the success that we had, I think close to 15,000 people came out to watch the race. So they were excited to come back, and we are excited to have them. So there are a number of ways for the community to get involved. Obviously, it's on a Sunday. And so the Park City Sunny Market has kindly relocated it once again to the top portion of the street. So people who are fans of the Silly Market can certainly come out and take part in that component. What we like to think is we'll get Silly Market fans who'll be exposed to a bike race, and then we'll get bike cycling fans who are exposed to the Silly Market. In between the two, we have the Tour of Utah Expo, which is on the lower portion of Upper Main Street, and that's all the Tour of Utah official sponsors who will be activating booths and sampling, and I think they're selling some merchandise as well. So it's a pretty active street for the community to come out. There's also a component at the start-finish, which is on Lower Main Street. So we're involving the Kimball Arts Center and Arts Kids. There's a chalk art project. So anyone with kids who wants to get involved can contact the Kimball Arts Center. Jenny Dearson has done a great job, and Pat Sanger from Arts Kids as well has been coordinating stuff. So after the cyclists leave, the start of the race is roughly 12 o'clock noon. They'll do some ceremonial laps around the historic district, and then they'll shoot them out Kearns Boulevard into Eastern Summit County. Once the cyclists leave town, we'll sort of unload kids onto the street with some artists to help them stay within the lines, and we'll decorate the street for the cyclists when they come back. Inspirational messages, sort of creative colors, whatever they decide. Last year was great. Somebody spelled out Park City on the street, so that appeared in all the photos and videos and was great branding for us. So
I would imagine you're going to make sure that happens again.
We have made a few phone calls. Yeah.
Find the best artist among the kids.
Creativity can only go so far.
And I'm sure there's strong evidence to suggest that this is a big financial boost for a Sunday in Park City. Have we been able to actually track and identify and come up with some sort of way of saying here's what the numbers look like for this particular event?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly anecdotal evidence. I do surveys after each of the events and get comments from, you know, sometimes they're unsolicited. I get comments from community members, both residents as well as merchants, positive and negative comments. And for the most part, last year the comments were almost unanimously positive, which is pretty unusual for an event, at least from my perspective. I tend to get mostly negative comments. So to hear that all the comments were positive was pretty good. We don't have actual data yet.
Bob, how do you like your job if you only get negative comments? How's that working
for
you?
It's a funny story. The first week of my job, I got so many negative calls, I thought, because it was a new position.
God, this is a great job.
For special events, and I moved here for it, and I thought, oh my God, I'm going to get fired. And it hasn't even been 1 week. Like, people hate events here.
Chamber call center.
Yeah.
I have just a question before we move on to Heinrich here about some logistical details. But I'm wondering, you know, I love cycling, but I really watch the Tour de France because I love to look at the villages it goes through. I like to do my little trip to France while watching the TV. I would imagine it's the same for Utah. And again, the economic boost to Utah in general, especially this year with it being in some of our most scenic areas. What are they figuring on that, the state of Utah?
Yeah, and that's a good question. Part of the reason that we're involved is not just because of the direct economic impact that it brings as a special event on a Sunday, but there are also a number of our partners around the state that are supporting the event. The Utah Sports Commission is behind this event. The Governor's Office of Economic Development supports it as well, as the Utah Office of Tourism. So I think all of these partners that we work with throughout the year recognize the event as an opportunity to promote tourism and travel throughout the state. This is the first year that the tour has gone to southern Utah. So Brian headed to Cedar City yesterday. Today they're going Panguitch to Torrey. So they're going through all the canyons. They're going to hit all of the national parks. So those helicopter shots that you see typically in Tour de France are going to be shown throughout the broadcast as
they
well.
They had a beautiful helicopter shot of the finish yesterday.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Yeah, and you'll see that throughout the week. I mean, they get some great... I mean, the shots on Sunday are amazing when the riders are coming up over the backside of Guardsman Pass, and you get that helicopter shot looking down onto historic Old Town. It's pretty spectacular.
That's great. Okay, Heinrich, you've been working really hard on the tour of Utah and putting
it all
together.
And you talk a lot, Heinrich. You've been saying so much in this program so far.
Thanks so much.
He's not used to just sitting there and saying nothing.
So he's sweating.
I mean, one of the biggest projects of recent years is this Deer Valley Drive project. So how is it all going to come together? What do we need to know?
Well, I can talk a logistics. If you don't mind, I'd like to just step back just a second to your question about the community. Two aspects I wanted to call out. If you're familiar with the tour or not familiar with the tour, there's an item called Tour Tracker, which is a web-based streaming broadcast of the event. And I honestly can't say enough about it. I'm not an IT guy, but is an incredible way to follow the tour. The pictures, the resolution is incredible. As a matter of fact, we were using it last year, Stage 6, in our emergency sort of response compound. So we could, not only were we listening to the race radios and all the emergency broadcasting, but we could actually physically watch the racers go over. So it's a great opportunity for the community to get involved with that. The second aspect, and I'll get to the logistics, is this is another opportunity for some of the Park City locals, in this case Tanner Putt. Throughout the years, Park City as a world-class destination, hosting world-class events, we've been very fortunate to have a lot of times our locals born and bred here in Park City, starting way back, but, you know, most notably like a Ted Ligety, you know, and in this case, again, Tanner Putt. And Tanner will be participating in this. And I believe it was the U23 National Championship that he won a few weeks ago. It's hard to live in town and not know Pat Putt and Andrea, you know, and the Putt family. So
there's a lot of putts.
There's a lot of putts, you know, and I think that's very important, you know, that our community has a participation in this world-class event, you know, and it gives our youth an opportunity to see sort of their heroes and as they grow up and what they can accomplish. So I just wanted to make that point. It not only is it Tour Utah, it's international, it's national, but it's very much grassroots and local here. So can I go on to logistics?
Absolutely. And
sorry,
great.
I had to get my point in.
See how he is, Len?
Great point that you made. Go ahead.
Well, so your question per Deer Valley Drive. So if you're familiar, last year we actually, that stage six is very, very similar to what it was last year. The only tweak this year is due to the Deer Valley Drive construction is the racers, when they come over Empire Pass, will actually be screaming directly down the Marsac or the Mine Road, which is known, speeds upwards to 60 miles an hour. I mean, they will be absolutely flying past the Ontario Mine on some of those 11% grades. They won't be coming down Royal Street, which has some great turns, et cetera, in it, which is very picturesque. But that's sort of the big change for the course itself. Logistically, it's very similar. You know, Main Street and Sweet Alley will be what we call the bubble. It's a credential area. Basically, on Sunday, if you don't have a credential, don't plan on coming into this area.
No, come into the area. Well, just don't drive into the area.
Just don't drive into the area. Thanks, Bob.
Since you brought up credentials, you guys, Lynn and I could use some media credentials.
We'll put you in touch with the right people.
Right.
You'll get nothing and like it.
Okay.
So I guess from a public takeaway, though, you know, the message that we really want to make sure that we get out is please come to the event. I think it's going to be a fantastic event, you know, partnering with Silly Market. We've got free public parking at the high school. So go to the high school. There's shuttle buses that will be going every 10 minutes starting at 8 a.m. all the way through 6 p.m. They'll bring you right to the transit center. You're dropped off. You're right in the meat of the action. It's going to be a good time. If not, alternative transportation. It's going to be really easy to ride your bike up Poison Creek Path and get to the area. So, you know, plan accordingly. If you're a business owner or an employee on Main Street, we have reserved some parking for China Bridge parking passes on the top of China Bridge and the North Marsac lot, if you're familiar with those areas. So you're still going to be able to get to work. You know, if you have to come and get the mail that day, it's very important. You know, you're going to have to look for, you know, some areas there. If, you know, if you're adamant about getting into to town, there is going to be public parking at $10 per vehicle in China Bridge. So you can still get up here, but, you know, plan accordingly, come early in the day, stay the day, have dinner on Main Street.
And the other parking structures will be open as well, the privately owned parking structures.
Question, just have 30 seconds. On Saturday, we can expect a trickle through, but also roads will close when the Peloton comes through, but not when the trickle of those amateur cyclists that are coming up from that.
Correct. So the ultimate challenge, which is the amateur ride that follows the course that the pros will ride later that day, and this is on Saturday, August 10th, they'll come through sort of periodically throughout the day. Rules of the road, so they have to abide by all road, traffic laws, so stopping at lights, single file. When the pros come through, which is going to be roughly 1:30 to 3 o'clock, at some point, roughly a 30-minute bubble between that 90-minute window, there'll be some temporary road closures with police sort of before and after the Peloton.
Okay, great. Bob and Heinrich, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. Want to thank our underwriters, Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Park City Clinic, Grand Valley Bank, Stein Erickson Lodge and Spa,
Park Meadows Country Club, Albion Financial, San Francisco Design, and Prudential Utah Real Estate.
You're listening to KPCW 91.9 FM, Park City.